been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the weekly wrap-up edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here with Bill Gunderson at Southport Capital. Sitting in, main goal today is just hoping to provide you with some perspective and kind of digest a bit of what the week has been. Of course, it's been a pretty big week in terms of volatility. The following bouncing ball analogy certainly applies. S&P 500 sold off, of course, sharply on Monday. That seems a bit forever ago. But, of course, on Tuesday had a pretty good bounce-back day. Wednesday, probably the biggest interday volatility was on Wednesday. Started out pretty rough on the downside when Bill and I started the show on Wednesday, but markets actually finished a tad bit higher on the day on Wednesday. Thursday was an up day for pretty much all equity markets. We've had the Dow and Nasdaq both were I think the Dow was almost up I think 0.98% and Nasdaq was actually up over 1% yesterday. And the unique thing there is they were actually both moving together, similar direction, and also in magnitude. So we haven't had there hasn't been a ton of days this year in 2021 where they've moved as much in lockstep. Certainly not both having decent days in the same magnitude. But and that's the nature of the Dow versus the Nasdaq during this time. You've got kind of the Dow as a barometer for the recovery and economic recovery both here and abroad. And then, of course, the Nasdaq at this point is in a spot where any good economic news is actually usually a deterrent to the Nasdaq, mainly because of the potential for higher interest rates, the Fed easing, getting rid of the tapering or beginning the tapering process, earlier potential, and so the earlier that tapering occurs, the higher that's going to be for interest rates. And that actually, will hurt your growth companies more often, as Bill has mentioned, in terms of your and discounting cash flows, earnings models. For Friday is looking to be pretty much somewhat of a flat day thus far. A lot of green on the screen, but in terms of volatility, looking much different than the earlier part of the week. But what do we make of all this? A couple of things, we do know, stock prices follow earnings. And of course, the market hates, it doesn't like uncertainty at all. And that's, this week has kind of been a pretty good gauge of uncertainty, and we'll hit some of these main themes, kind of the main balls in the air. If you will, Bill and I have touched on them kind of this week, but a lot of times the market's going to be focused on a number of variables at any given time, and currently that list seems to be getting a bit longer, and so this week just with a lot of moving parts and so we've kind of identified a handful of certainly. Metrics, headlines, items, whether, in the economy, whether it's, political, whether it's, part of, international, whether it's recovering from COVID, right? So there's a lot of different, we've got a lot of number of balls in the air, and just to get a bit of a list of those, and we're going to go through, each of these later on in the show. But we've got, of course, the debt ceiling, and we'll hit on the news in terms of making progress on that happened overnight and I guess a bit this morning. Inflation, of course, energy being the most recent example this week. And that's kind of what led to that vicious kind of sell-off on Monday. Of course, you've got supply chain issues also increasing inflationary pressures in the shipping primarily one big input. China, of course, that's a big ball. We call that's juggling a beach ball. Lots of different things, of course, apply under that, whether it's, trade deals, sovereignty for Taiwan, cybersecurity, the list goes on, but we'll get some insights and see, kind of get a gauge of, how the week was, for there. They actually, began trading, back for the first time again, yesterday. They had, a week, closed for a week, for, holiday, over there in China. Fourth, ball is, just the health of the economic recovery as a whole, both, here around the globe. A lot of what's tying into that, right, is COVID and reopening and kind of the starting and stopping, whether it's some variant that that causes that, or if it's 50 container ships sitting off the various coasts of the world. And so that's, another big ball, another big uncertainty, and the kind of last one and all of these kind of tie together, but it's just a Fed watch. Whether last week it was I forget what they're going to do with interest rates. It was will Powell be in charge? Even be in charge in a few months. And so this week I think Biden came out and gave a bit of support for Powell, which was kind of against some of the other other pieces of the of the Democratic leadership trying to essentially oust Powell. So not only are we just watching interest rates, but we're watching who potentially the leadership will be at the Fed. But interest rates were a bit more tame this week, and we'll get into the jobs report. It's a big barometer for kind of when that taper is going to start. Is if you remember, inflation's an important Fed target, but also job full employment, right? It's another goal of the Fed, and so they're going to be balancing those two. As this week has been a bit of a mixed bag, at least from the beginning to the end. Of course, like I said, we'll get into the numbers, but it looks like the job report was a bit of a mixed bag as well. On the surface, it looked pretty rough, but when you dive into the numbers, there's some you can kind of gain some optimism too. So we'll kind of look through that report and kind of get an idea of our thoughts on kind of how potentially the Fed may interpret this most recent job report, because they've mentioned that it's a very important report for them to look at to get the data in order to move forward with some form or pace of tapering. So those are kind of and you can probably add a handful of other balls there, but those are kind of the big five, at least currently. And as they always do, they'll, it'll be a domino effect, and there'll be some that will slide out, and others will slot in. But as investors, of course, there's always going to be uncertainty in the market. And currently, like I said, the list is pretty long, at least currently. Some of that's going to play itself out, right? Debt ceiling got kicked down the road. Some of the political policies that that are working to get in place, those at some point will have a deadline of either they're going to get in place or we're going to be in midterm election season. So some of these things will kind of work themselves out one way or the other, but it's certainly worth talking about and worth keeping an eye on. Just remember, October is historically a volatile month for the markets. A lot of people think of October as not a good month for the market. In reality, It's not that it's known much for from a negative side. It's really mostly known from volatility, and it tends to set up a lot of positives for the back half of the fourth quarter, which tends to be seasonally a strong quarter. So, from our perspective, just adds it's more reason we're advocates for active and unconstrained management. Of course, Bill's approach allows our portfolios to adapt to kind of the ever-changing backdrop of the market. So we're kind of reassessing our goal as analysts and portfolio managers is to reassess the status quo, what's going on in the markets, and keep our clients, listeners abreast of what's happening out there, and hopefully just provide a bit of perspective on what's going on. But we've made it through the first segment here pretty quickly. Of course, we'll come back and keep going through some current news and also dive into some perspective. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour with your host, Barry Kite, sitting in for our captain, Mr. Bill Gunderson, today. And, as a precursor kind of to looking at this volatile week and in the balls that we're kind of referring to as bouncing balls, juggling balls, whatever analogy you'd like to use. It's going to be hard to juggle balls and then throw the China beach ball in there, but we'll manage. But kind of just looking, time periods, can give us looking at different time periods can give us a good perspective overall, especially if when you're looking at daily charts or someone's looking at weekly charts or looking at 12-month charts, looking at a 5-year chart. You can and depending on that time length, right? You can garner different outcomes from each of those charts, and it can all even it can all be the same stock. And so, Credit Suisse put out an interesting note. I think it's some key numbers, metrics, kind of putting the last 20 months in perspective. Kind of post pre-COVID, post-COVID. And as as analysts, managers, we're always, like I said, always trying to reaffirm our current investment thesis. Whether it's at the market level or at the portfolio level or at the individual stock level, we're always almost kind of doing the litmus test at all times. And so the app does that on a daily basis where. If there's any, we've made any changes to growth expectations or, average analyst expectations. If management, raises a forecast, if analysts raise a forecast or a price target. So there's a lot of different variables that go in on a day-to-day basis. And so we're, the app kind of resets that. And that's the rankings, ranking those names on a daily basis. And so, so a lot of the times it's, you're really, trying to, look, here's our initial thought, right? What's happened? Kind of mash all that together. And then, are we still on the same page or do we need to change our thinking? And so, looking back, and I think this is a good perspective, especially from a macro level, is, over the last 20 months, just looking at some different time periods, just some different metrics of, what was happening before COVID, what's happening after. And so a couple of, interesting notes is, the S&P is 27% above, pre-pandemic highs, and actually 93% above, post-pandemic lows. So if you think of the, lows, lows of March, and I think we retested those a bit in April, roughly the market's 93%, above those numbers. And that's 27% above where we started, pre-pandemic. So it's you would think that the opposite, right? You know, some of this a global pandemic, right? You know, overall, you're thinking, you know, probably not good for much of business, you know, on any level. But you look at the market, whether it's stimulus, cheaper money. A lot of money has been, kind of forced into equities, right? The goal is to increase those, to kind of inflate your way out of, out of a recession. That's, usually with asset prices and keeping interest rates low, kind of forces folks from bonds and to move over to higher returning assets, which ends up being equities. So that thought that was pretty interesting. Bill, preaching earnings, forward earnings expectations are actually 21% above pre-pandemic levels. So company profitability has been, has actually been very strong, certainly in some sectors more than others, coming out of the recovery. So I think that part's interesting. Of course, earnings expectations are higher, but also, your forward P.E. is now around 20 times, which is actually down from the September 2020 peak of a little bit above 23. So we've kind of, in pre-pandemic level was at 19. So we're not too much above the pre-pandemic level either. So just kind of gives you that before and after view of things. A couple other neat numbers. I think, the 10-year treasury yield is basically back around its pre-pandemic level. We're at 1.6%, prior to, the pandemic and got as low as point, or 51 basis points or 0.51%. And that was in August of 2020. Let's see, on the jobs front, which will, a good segue into the jobs report here in a bit, but the jobless rate of 5.2%, I think it ticked down to 4.9, based on the most recent report. So essentially 4.9 going into, which is well down from the 14.8% that we had in the peak. So, prior to pre-pandemic, right, we were pretty much, at some of the most full employment, I think, historically that we've ever been. And that was 3.5%. So we're, 4.9, we're at 3.5, which was, probably one of the lowest levels in history, actually. So, last piece, CPI, or inflation indicator, certainly a big market mover as of late. 5.2% is the current CPI number, and that's the highest highest in 13 years. So, pretty certainly significant, something to worry about if it if it persists. Obviously, but that's we get caught up in looking forward. The market is is a great crystal ball in terms of an indicator, but the where we're at now in the market, it's you've got a lot of a lot of different forces pushing and pulling on each other, and it's tricky to see which things are going to prevail. Certainly interest rates are a huge probably the number one piece of a determinant of all of kind of where we're going. But there's other, a lot of these growth, growth numbers, you're going to have to, you want to avoid stagflation. And, some folks can make an argument for stagflation when you look at the jobs report that came out this morning. So there's, it's one of these things where you can kind of play it on both sides, which probably is best for the market, where, we kind of want to stay in this kind of Goldilocks range where, we don't want the economy to fire up too fast, which is kind of what led to a lot of these supply chain shortages, when, when the economy initially reopened. And so, but you got to weigh that growth, right, against inflation. And so when you're, and jobs. And so, when you're looking at that, it's not an easy job for them, but I think a mixed jobs report will kind of, hopefully let us thread the needle, give us the ability to thread the needle a little easier. Well, we've blown through the first half of the show, and we'll kind of regroup, and we're going to hit each one of those balls that are kind of in the air when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the second half of the Best Stocks Now Hour. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here with Bill Gunderson and Best Stocks Now. Well, it looks like in terms of the market, if that sound you're hearing is the can getting kicked down the road, I guess the Republicans and Democrats did come together at least for a period of time. And not just to bash Facebook this time around. As you likely know, have reached a deal on a short-term deal on the debt ceiling to avert default, which we were, of course, everyone expects this to get raised and be resolved. Every time it gets brought up, but just the exercise of going through the uncertainty. It's rough for the bond world. It's rough for, our industry and, academically, over the years, you do enough, finance classes and, we're always talking about the risk-free rate. Well, the risk-free rate is always considered the, T-bill rate, right? Well, if you start potentially having default on the risk-free rate, well, what does that mean for actual risk assets? It means they're more risky. And so, the whole dynamic just kind of, I think of it just in the academia world would, throw a lot of the valuation formulas, completely off. So, certainly glad they, something got done. More needs to be done. And so we'll kind of, leave it at that. But on this particular, this particular ball, at least it's, paused and we'll be bouncing around like a lottery ball here, soon enough again as we approach. I think it's roughly early December. I think December 6th, was the date that, or December 3rd, one or the other, in terms of when they think they will run out. So that's that part is kind of wrapped up. The other uncertainty around any government intervention, right? Whether it's the size of the spending bills coming up, the infrastructure bill, taxes, right? So there's a lot of political policies in the air, up in the air that, like I said, will should work themselves out pretty quickly, in terms of as we're approaching, the midterm election season. So you're just not going to have as much time to get something done and maybe not even the will on some of, on some of your more moderate Democrat side, that are probably likely going to have a tougher race in the midterms. But that's, so part of that, right? You tie that into tax policy, whether it's at the state or federal level. And, as Bill alluded to, yesterday, I don't know if Bill talked to Elon or what, but, it's now official. Tesla will be moving their headquarters to Texas. I think Bill alluded to the fact that, they expected it to be coming. But like I said, today it's official. Some of the big reasons, number one, I think Elon moved there, not too long ago, to focus on SpaceX, but, also, they feel like they have more access to more talent. It's going to be, should be cheaper for, their engineers, their AI engineers to live in terms of, housing, similar housing, I think, as, they say a difference between, 250 and, 4 million. range. I'm not sure, I'm not sure if that 250 is still the same number in Austin. I know we've got some, clients and certainly some listeners there. I think those prices, average prices for some of those are going to be quite a bit higher at this point. But, so that's, that's an example of, of policy move, right? Affecting, business investment and in this case, moving from California towards, towards Texas. The other thing is actually some progress has been made on the global minimum tax deal that you hear about here and there. Of course, that's the the point there is to effectively have a 15% on your multinational companies, your largest companies, minimum of 15% on the tax rate. And they actually there's a handful of holdouts out there, and Ireland was a big one. That's actually a country that you had a lot of these reverse mergers moving over to. I know I think Jazz Pharmaceutical is one that I remember from from before they kind of changed some of the rules on that. But that's going to it could be a headwind, right, for some of your major players. In Ireland, I think they were at 12.5. Well, they're now going to be at 15. Looks like the biggest difference there was they crossed out two words in the document, and it used to be at least 15%, but they crossed out the word at least. So in other words, it was going to say just 15%, meaning hopefully that rate wouldn't be pushed up later. So that's Ireland asked for that. I think the only other EU holdout is I want to say it's Hungary. Now in the U.S., it's not for granted, of course, that we're going to agree to it. You've got to, it's going to face challenges, in Congress, of course. The Senate, would have to, alter existing tax treaties, which in doing so actually requires a 2/3 vote there. So it would have to have some GOP support, to even kind of hop on to this, global minimum tax deal. So that'll be, another one of those, pieces in the in the legislature, which is going to have an effect on the markets. Next one, like I said, a really big is inflation, whether it's energy, commodities, shipping. First kind of saw it a lot in the steel, copper, fertilizer, corn, soybeans, food. And now, you're starting to see it in the oil and natural gas sectors. Those were the reasons, on Monday that just, the market really, it took some heat because, all your costs in Europe were going to be exorbitant in terms of natural gas cost. Actually closed at a decade plus closing high, this week at 631, roughly about 10% off of that high level now. And natural gas, actually looks like it's going to end up finishing the week a bit lower, at least from Friday. And, oil, right? Oil is also, trading, at levels that we haven't seen since 2014. So any of those, energy costs, right, are going to go, going into, virtually everything we make, which is going to, also, keep that persistent inflation high. So, it's something certainly to keep an eye on. Good news, I think you had, some rhetoric from, our secretary, energy secretary, in terms of releasing some of the strategic oil reserve. Saw something, earlier today that they kind of walked that back. Putin said he's gonna, will be happy to turn on the spigot, for Europe. What's the, what strings are attached to that, I guess. And so, there's a, we've got a lot of, kind of, I call it verbal stimulus. Not sure how much, oil was, is up over, 1.5%, at the end of the week this week and on Friday. And so I'm not sure how much of an effect it had, but at least it, kind of quelled the, big jump, that we were seeing on Monday. The last piece is, in terms of, semiconductors, those are another huge, huge driver in terms of cost, also ties into supply chain issues. And so it looks like Taiwan, Semi just announced their, monthly revenue, grew by 20% year over year, and that's 11% from the prior quarter. Grew 19.7% year over year. And if you remember, this time last year, Bill and I were writing articles for Seeking Alpha talking about, the earnings growth and potential and pricing, profitability from a pricing standpoint. And, that was last year, and we're already 20% over that year over year. So just shows you the importance of, the chip makers and, the effect that their, supply or lack thereof, has had on other parts of the economy. Beach ball, of course, China, we could probably spend an entire segment or even show on that there. We've got, of course, Evergrande collapse, is turning into, Fantasia's the most recent one. So we've got, Mickey Mouse, sounds like, caught up in the fray, but we'll touch on China and the other couple of balls out there. And when we come back for the last segment, but stay with us. Best Stocks Now. Welcome back to the closing segment of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst and Seeking Alpha contributor here with Bill Gunderson. And closing the week out looking in terms of the market, right? We started out on a rough note. Looks like we're probably should be finishing up the week on a positive note. Certainly didn't feel like we were going to get there, get this far on, when we started on Monday. We've gotten some relief, over, on some of those big balls that, that were, juggling in the air in terms of the market. Lots of those at this point, currently. Usually the market's focused on, three at the most, significant. Material market moving, stories at a time. Of course, there's always the unknown story that could come up, but, the known stories. China, of course, being one of those, and, we kind of just lumped that whole thing into, one subheading, but, there's a lot going on over there. Of course, from a credit standpoint, you've got the Evergrande stuff, you've got, Fantasia is the most recent one, and that's those notes have taken a significant haircut. I think they've missed at least one payment, they're gonna have to work through that. And as we know from 08-09, any kind of debt defaults, debt crisis, always has the potential to cascade into something bigger, we'll say on the Chinese note, at least, if they want to go in and try to fix it, take over the buildings, do whatever they want, Communist Party kind of will allow for that to, more quickly than it would, for instance, us going through the 08 or, pain of the 08 or 09 mortgage crisis and trying to squeeze all of those, underwater properties out. And also, other big thing, we'll see, is it rhetoric? Who knows, right? But you've got Xi and Biden scheduled to meet via Zoom before the end of the year. I think that came out around midweek. Of course, the next day saw a story. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal of the of U.S. CIA essentially training some defense forces in Taiwan. People ask me, get clients or, ask me, kind of our thoughts just on, Taiwan and sovereignty and China impacting on that. rationally, right? And, you know, it doesn't make sense because, you know, I think, you know, economically it would be a disaster because, you know, as Bill touched on, the amount of semiconductors, you know, that are coming out of Taiwan, we have a shortage on those already. You know, well, I don't think the world's going to be pretty, you know, not just us. I don't think the entire world's going to be too happy, with an invasion of Taiwan. So from a rationalist perspective, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem like it should even be, you know, even thought about. But of course, right, with China, who, you know, not necessarily going to be rational completely. So, we'll see. And of course, that's always, you know, an outlier, in terms of what could happen. And the importance of that is just, you know, with that, Taiwan semi report of, you know, sales increasing, you know, 20% year over year. Well, you know, those are important chips and important inputs for, the globe's economy, not just for us. Last thing is, you know, kind of the sell-off from, commodities that we saw, you know, starting a couple of weeks back. And it's primarily, you know, China was having some slow economic numbers. Anytime, you know, China slows, whether it's them doing it on purpose or them, you know, actually having an economic issue, their, commodities take a, you know, huge hit when they slow. And it's just because they ingest so many, commodities, you know, all sorts around the, you know, around the globe. And so any slowdown there, right, you're going to have a loss, you know, on the commodity side in terms of pricing. So it's certainly something we want to watch closely and some of the reasons that Bill kind of divested out of those, you know, some of those reflation trade names. We still hold a few exposure there, but, you know, it's certainly something we've lightened up on. The last two big things kind of go together, the health of the economy and recovery and the Fed watch. You know, most important thing recently in terms of economic recovery is just a, you know, tightening supply chain, you know, and, you know, slowdowns in terms of actually, you know, getting goods to places, even if they're on a boat, and getting them off and trucking them to where they've got to go. And so that's a, you know, certainly a big headwind from an economic standpoint. And, you know, kind of save the best for last. We've got, you know, all important unemployment report we've been hearing about all week. You know, analysts were looking for a 500,000 number. We got 194,000. So not near the gains that we thought. Very, the revised number from last month was at 235, which was, you know, very disappointing, but had a lot to do with the Delta variant. That was actually revised up, looks like about 131,000. So it actually was up, you know, 366 last week. And 194 this week. The one thing is, you know, unemployment actually ticked down to 4.8% from 5.1, you know, expected to be 5.1. The trick there is the way you calculate it. You know, to me, that means that some people quit looking for jobs, which isn't a positive thing. So how you calculate, right, these unemployment figures is also very important. You know, one unique aspect of that is in general education, I think they, you know, basically there was no gain. When in reality, if you seasonally adjust it, in reality, there was a 1 million, job gain, you know, certain 1 million more jobs in that area than there was last year. Obviously, that's because of schools closing, COVID, restrictions. So there's some, you know, you can get some positives from, the point is you get some, it's a mixed bag. And so you get some positives. It'll be a great debate and it'll probably be something we'll be hearing, all tired of hearing about here eventually, which way we want to, show this report. But, you know, that's our job and the reason we, you know, want to, you know, use unconstrained management and active management in terms of, you know, just being nimble, and trying to keep up with the, ever-changing market. So if you're interested, you want to know a little bit more about what we do, get a copy of the newsletter. You can reach us at 855-611-BEST. That's 855-611-2378. Or, of course, you can reach us at the website, GundersonCapital.com. And we're always happy to look at what you're doing in your portfolio. If you have any financial planning questions, always feel free to bounce those off of us. We're here to be a resource. And hope everyone has a great week, and we'll see you on Monday.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.